My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
We'll take over from there. We're efforting to get Scott Miller from MLB Radio, talk some baseball with him. Orioles, they're off today following taking 2 of 3 from the Tampa Bay Rays out in Tampa. They return home tomorrow for a 2-game set against the Washington Nationals. And I'm excited to see this team come back home. I'm excited to see this team kind of get back to showing some consistency, because we had Rich Dubroff on the show about a half hour ago, and, you know, we were just talking a little bit about how a lot of teams are chasing consistency right now around the league. You could maybe say the Diamondbacks for sure are the hottest team right now, but everybody else is kind of up and down these days. And it looks like we got Scott Miller from MLB Radio. Scott, how you doing?
Hey, good. How are you? Are you all good?
Yes, sir. Got you. Sounding great. And I was just talking a little bit about the inconsistency from a lot of these teams, even postseason teams around the league right now. A lot of people here in Baltimore, I don't want to say panicking, but we're nitpicking these days out here when it comes to the Orioles. We nitpick a lot, and I think last year kind of set people's sights really high for this team, who got off to such a great start at the first half of the season, and really since a little bit before the All-Star break, it's been up and down for this ball club, but it feels like it's that way for every other team around Major League Baseball. I mean, can you sit here today and say that you feel like there is a true top dog in baseball?
No. There's no one great team this year. I agree with you. There's no doubt about it. I thought earlier in the season, you know, I went through a period of time where I thought, you know, the Orioles, Yankees, and Dodgers were probably the best three teams in the game. And then the Phillies joined in. And, you know, but since then, you look at those teams, you know, the Phillies went through a really rough patch after the All-Star break. The Yankees and Orioles both have only been, you know, over the past month or so, maybe, you know, 500 or a little bit above. Dodgers are hit by injuries right now. So, you know, you look around and, you know, I still think if you survey the 30 teams in the game, as you mentioned, the Diamondbacks are really hot right now, as are the San Diego Padres. All of a sudden, you look in the West, in Arizona and San Diego are with it, both tied for second, just three and a half games behind the Dodgers. Padres have won 16 of 19. Diamondbacks, 15 of 18, I believe. So they're probably right now, over the last 3 weeks, Arizona and San Diego are playing as well as anybody. But I think overall, I still think, you know, the Orioles, Yankees, Phillies, and assuming they get healthy soon, Dodgers are probably the best teams.
And you brought up the Padres, and I feel like I'm always reluctant to kind of buy into what they're doing. They've had a ton of talent over the years, and it just feels like they never are able to live up to that talent. But they have been hot for almost a month now. Are you starting to buy into the optimism of not only this team finishing the season strong, but potentially making noise in October?
They could. I mean, it's interesting because they've had this hot streak, 16 wins in 19 games with Fernando Tatis Jr. out. Joe Musgrove has been out. Yu Darvish is out. And they're still hot. Musgrove comes back tonight. He's going to start against Pittsburgh. So we'll see how that goes. But the thing that's different about this Padres team, their roster is a little better constructed this year. What they've got in their lineup, and it was exacerbated by the first week of the season trade to acquire Luis Arraez, the batting champion out of Miami. And, you know, there's a bit player on the roster, Donovan Solano, that bounced around a little bit most recently with the Giants. Those two guys put the bat on the ball. And top to bottom, that the Padres do. They've got a good lineup of contact hitters. They strike out very infrequently. I mean, you know, they lead the majors, or they're maybe second in fewest strikeouts. And so when you put the ball in play, good things can happen. And we're in an era now where strikeouts are accepted and tolerated. And that's the way it is. But when you put a team together that puts the bat on the ball and doesn't strike out as much, man, what an advantage you can have. Because if you don't put the ball in play, nothing good can happen. If you do put the ball in play, you've got a chance. And you know, I go back to the Kansas City Royals teams, the back-to-back World Series teams, 2014, 2015. 15, they won it all. And that was the kind of team they had. The Royals back then had a team that put the bat on the ball. And that's what the Padres are doing this year, and that's why I think they've got a fighting chance.
We're talking to Scott Miller from MLB Radio. It's Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan. And Scott, you bring up the Royals, and they've got an MVP candidate right now in Bobby Witt Jr. We know Aaron Judge is definitely somewhere near the top of that list, if not at the top. How do you kind of shape out the MVP race right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really fascinating because, you know, the past couple of years, it's almost been like, you know, Aaron Judge's to lose. Or when Shohei Ohtani was in the American League with the Angels, it was his to lose. Whereas, you know, I agree, there's a real competition going right now. You know, Judge is, phenomenal. His OPS, he leads the majors at 1.161, as it shows. And, you know, Bobby Witt's fourth in OPS. You know, Witt has just lifted that Kansas City Royals team. He leads the majors in batting average. You know, Witt is he and Judge, you know, I think it's a couple things. There's, you know, a month and a half or whatever to go. So we'll see how they go down the last 6 weeks. But also, you know, we'll see how their teams do because, you know, most valuable player, team success factors into it. I think you really have to credit Bobby Witt. Nobody expected the Kansas City Royals to be in playoff contention this year. And he's almost single-handedly lifted them into playoff contention. I think that's going to help him a lot. You know, Judge is, you know, he's got his on-base percentage is unbelievable, 46% right now. You know, and obviously that includes a lot of, he's getting walked a lot because, you know, people are pitching around him. But still, 46% on base is pretty solid. So it'll come between one of those two guys. And it's going to be a foot race, a sprint down the stretch.
I want to go to the American League West right now. It's a neck-and-neck tie right there with the Astros and Mariners, both of them blowing out opponents yesterday. The Astros blowing out the Red Sox, the Mariners taking care of the Mets last night. Which one of these teams are you buying the most?
Ooh, that's a good question. The fascinating thing is the Astros, they played, what is it, like 7 consecutive American League Championship Series. I mean, they've won that division so much, and the Mariners can never get over the hump. But what the Mariners have, they've got pitching right now, and you win with pitching. I mean, you know, Logan Gilbert just pitched a masterpiece the other day against against the New York Mets. You know, George Kirby's been terrific. Bryce Miller's been good. Luis Castillo, I think, takes the ball today. You know, the offense, they've got to figure out a way to score runs to back the pitching. Cal Raleigh did that yesterday. Raleigh had a huge day yesterday. But, you know, I think the Mariners can win this division. But what they need to happen, Julio Rodriguez has not had – he's had a disappointing year, and then he's been hurt. He's back in the lineup now. But if he can start swinging it the way we expect him to, I think that's really going to help the Mariners. You know, I think their trade deadline pickups, Randy Arozarena and Justin Turner, can help as well.
Scott, great stuff, man. Really appreciate your time this afternoon. I'm sure we'll talk again as the playoff race is heating up in a big way in Major League Baseball.
All right. Look forward to it. Thanks. And we'll be watching those Orioles. It's fun to watch Baltimore back in the spotlight.
I'm glad how times have changed. It feels like just yesterday, the Orioles were apparently bad for baseball. And now, you know, they're definitely one of the bright young spots for sure.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
An insider's look at the National Football League. It's NFL Lunch,
presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse,
with Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan.
Time to feed you some football. It's NFL Lunch on Vinny and Haney. Cordell Woodland filling in for the Bobster. Vinny's out at one winning drive here with Quick Draw McGraw behind the glass. We're holding down the fort until 2 o'clock, where Inside Access will take over from there. Got to see a couple of rookie quarterbacks get on the field over the weekend. Let's go out to New England. Didn't get to see a lot of Drake May. He only had the one drive, maybe two drives, I can't remember, but they were pretty uneventful. 2 for 3, 19 yards passing. Didn't really get to do a whole lot, a lot of handing the ball off. Joe Milton actually stole the show out of New England, going 4 for 6, 54 yards and a touchdown pass. There's been a lot of talk out in New England camp about Joe Milton, so we got to finally get a look at him in the game over the weekend. I don't think that there's really any true threat to Drake May, and whether it's because I think Jacoby Brissett is going to start for the Patriots this year. So whether we're talking about Drake May being the backup or whatever the case may be, I don't see Joe Milton jumping ahead of Drake May in any way right now.
It's always an interesting situation when you're clearly a team that's already out of it. You know you're going to be bad. You're already viewing this as sort of a rebuild year, but you're not willing to throw your rookie first-round quarterback in there week one. It's just such a strange dynamic for me, but kind of tells you the state of the league or how much value is put on the quarterback position in the draft that guys go in the first round and it's not even a guarantee that they start week one for a bad team. I mean, it's just strange, but I don't know. If I was running a team, I'd throw him out there. It's sink or swim. You only have so many years to decide if this is your guy or not. I don't want to give up any games. So to me, I mean, you kind of know what you're getting with Brissett. He's a very quality backup in this league, but why not play Drake May? What do you have to lose?
Yeah, I mean, I'm for the most part, I'm right there with you. I mean, you drafted this guy, what, third overall? Anybody that's drafted in the top 10, honestly, like, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. What's the point in sitting these guys? I do think that the league has, with the league going away from quarterbacks holding a clipboard for the first couple of years of their career, has changed the way we all view how teams should deal with rookie quarterbacks, because it used to be the norm where you draft a rookie and there was no way you were starting that guy. No matter how bad of a shape your team was in, you were giving that quarterback time to learn. But we've seen more and more over the years where quarterbacks are thrown out there. And I don't think it's a coincidence that we're seeing more and more bust at the position because guys aren't given that time to kind of learn. You look at guys like Patrick Mahomes. You look at Jordan Love now. There are examples of guys that have been able to kind of take some time and learn from the sidelines. And then when they get their opportunity, they take off. But also you have the CJ Strouds now. You have the Deshaun Watsons when he was in Houston at the time. There have been plenty of examples, Andrew Luck, of quarterbacks that get thrown in and they just take off. I'm kind of in the middle right now. I feel like it should be a case-by-case situation. But in terms of Drake May specifically, I'm right there. I mean, if you're the Patriots, what else are you looking at? What are you doing to bring fans to your stadium if you're not going to play the potential face of your franchise?
The only other hangup I could really think of is, you know, do you trust the O-line to protect him?
Yeah.
And all right, if your O-line isn't that great and you say, well, we don't want, you know, Drake May, this valuable, you know, piece for us, to get hurt. Well, I mean, yeah, you should build a competent O-line no matter what. I mean, injuries happen, sure. I mean, teams get decimated by injuries, and, you know, look at, was it Miami last year? Somebody just got completely their entire O-line wiped out. So, yeah, Giants, that's happened. That's who it was.
Definitely the Giants, and not that it was great to begin with, but yes.
So, yeah, you don't want your rookie quarterback out there while he's trying to learn and get reps running for his life, because that's not a good teaching experience at all. It's going to start instilling bad habits, if anything.
And there's not really many weapons out there for him either. It's the Patriots are in terrible shape. So, yeah, I can see both sides of the coin right now. But, yeah, just the conversation about starting your rookie quarterback, I just think it's a case-by-case situation. Let's go out to Washington. They went out to New York to take on the Jets. Second overall pick, Jaden Daniels. Looks like he's probably going to end up starting for the Commanders this year. He got off to a good start, 2 for 3, 45 yards passing. Also had the rushing touchdown on the one drive that he got. He checked out of the play that was called. Apparently it was a screen pass called. He checked out of that, throws the 42-yard pass down the field to Dyami Brown. Looked really good in that short sample size. Obviously, I'm excited about Jaden Daniels, but I think his talent just jumps off the screen. I don't think it's tough to see that there's something there with him.
No, it was the right choice to draft him there. You know, and it is encouraging. You mentioned him, you know, making some changes already at the line.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really see that in general in preseason action, and especially not from your rookie that you just, this is first taste of the NFL.
Let's go out to Buffalo where the Bears took on the Bills, blew out the Bills. Not that it really matters. 33-6. Josh Allen, he was 2 for 3, 22 yards passing in this game. Did have a 7-yard rush as well. The number one overall pick, Caleb Williams, he started for the Bears. He went 4 for 7, 95 yards passing. I mean, he threw that one pass. He also had a 13-yard rush. But he threw that one pass, I think it was to Cole Kmet, where he's rolling out and throws it across his body. And it looked like it was going to be maybe a 10-15-yard pass with the angle that he was running towards the sideline. And he throws it maybe like 20-25 yards up the field. I mean, his arm talent is out of this world. I don't think, just like how I said about Jaden, I have no doubts that Caleb Williams is going to be, at least individually, he has the talent to be a great player. The pieces are all there for Chicago. It's still the Bears for me.
Do you think that, of course, we view rookies different than other quarterbacks. You're almost kind of grading on a curve a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know there's going to be mistakes, but as great of a situation as he's in, I almost feel like that removes the excuses for him. You know, sure, he's a rookie, but, you know, look at all that talent around you. Yeah. I mean, there's veteran quarterbacks in this league who would kill to have that kind of wide receiver trio, just really? Those offensive weapons in general. I feel like some people, and the national media in particular, especially if they win early in the year and they're kind of in that playoff conversation, once you get past the halfway point of the season, maybe some struggles will come and people aren't going to be forgiving. They'll get on his case. And, you know, there's no room for excuses with all that talent.
Yeah, I mean, that I think that it wouldn't shock me. I've always said people unfairly grade quarterbacks. I don't like the way people judge quarterbacks in this day and age to a degree. And you're right. I think the fact that he's the number one overall pick in itself, he's going to carry a lot of pressure. But just with what he's walking into, the receiving core he's walking into, the rebuilt defense that the Bears have right now. It was one of the better defenses to end the year last year. By all accounts, people think the Bears are going to be good, even though they have a head coach who was just on the hot seat last year. So I'm curious to see what type of wiggle room he gets, if any. But I do think a lot of people are going to be looking at him like, all right, they should at least be competitive. I think people, when they look at the North, people are buying into the Lions these days. I think people are somewhat at least buying into the Packers after how they finished the year last year. So whether the Bears kind of slot into that, I'm not sure. But I don't think people are going to give him the pass that maybe they're going to give some of these other rookie quarterbacks, at least to start, because of the talent that he has around him. Let's go to Minnesota, staying in the NFC North. Another team that has a rookie quarterback, J.J. McCarthy. He went 11 for 17, 188 yards, 2 touchdowns, and an interception. Also rushed for 18 yards. But McCarthy looked good. He had the one interception, but he really picked it up as the game went on. And I was skeptical of J.J. McCarthy throughout the draft process. Everybody was hyping him up. You got Jim Harbaugh calling him the greatest college quarterback of all time. It's stuff like that that makes me kind of back away from players like J.J. McCarthy. But I think that I honestly am not as down on the Vikings the way that everybody else seems to be. I think that their biggest issue beyond Kirk Cousins not being available for them last year is that their O-line was terrible. And they addressed that to a degree this year. I want to see what the Vikings look like this year, because I still think they have enough talent to at least compete and make some noise in the North.
I think I'm kind of like you. The McCarthy stuff coming out of the draft, I mostly just didn't understand. I mean, from everything that I saw from him at Michigan, just simply being a winner doesn't make you, you know, a first-round quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a big difference, but I brought it up at the time, but, I mean, Stetson Bennett was a winner at Georgia.
Right.
Obviously, they're
different. He threw 4 picks yeah. yesterday.
Different physical attributes. They're not the same guy, but you can't simply say, well, he wins games. That's why we're taking right. him in the first round. And to be honest, though, once the draft was over, outside of Caleb Williams going to the Bears, when you talk about inviting situations for a rookie quarterback, of this year's class, I feel like McCarthy has the second best situation he's walking into.
I agree.
You know, best wide receiver in the league at your disposal? Yeah, I'll take that. So he might be a guy that, yeah, doesn't start the year. Sam Darnold might get the nod there for the first couple weeks, but I still think McCarthy should get the most run here, and it would not surprise me at all if they're competitive into November, December.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, unless the Vikings truly do believe that they're going to suck this year, why would they trot Sam Darnold out there to start for them this year? I wouldn't even go that route. You know what you have in Sam Darnold. We've all seen that movie before. Unless they really believe that they're not able to compete the way that they want to this year, it's no reason to start a Sam Darnold. Lastly, let's go out to Indianapolis where the Broncos took on the Colts, defeated the Colts 34-30. We had Bo Nix, rookie quarterback in this one, 15 for 21, 125 yards. Also had a passing touchdown, had 17 yards rushing as well. Bo Nix looked really good for the Broncos in this one. And he's another one that I was skeptical of. I think the talent is there with Bo, but I was just curious in terms of would the Broncos fully buy into him. You'd hope so, using a first-round pick on him, but it just seems like I was unclear on if whether or not they wanted to try to tank for Shador next year or what they want to do. But Bo Nix could end up being a winner for them. Anthony Richardson got to play for the Colts on the other side, who we didn't get to see a lot of last year once his season was cut short with the shoulder injury. He went 2 for 4 with 25 yards passing as well. Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll look back at that Ravens preseason game, talk about some of the guys that stood out to us. That's next here on The Fan. Vinny and Haney back on 105.7 The Fan. Cordell Woodland here for Bob Haney. Vinny's out at practice. Nolan Quickdraw McGraw behind the glass. A couple of Ravens notes to get to real quick. Number one, Rashad Bateman is back at practice today by all accounts. I'm seeing a couple of the reporters out there tweeting that out. Also, it looks like TJ Tampa has been taken off the PUP list, so we should be seeing him at some point soon. We did talk to John Harbaugh about him yesterday, and Harbs didn't make it seem like we would see TJ Tampa this week, but he was taken off the PUP list today for whatever that's worth, so maybe we are getting closer to him making his training camp debut. You did hear from Trenton Simpson coming back in. Linebacker for the Ravens. He had 11 tackles in the game on Friday night. And he was one of the people I think a lot of us were trying to pay attention to for this first preseason game. Really haven't gotten a major look at him. He played obviously a lot in the Week 18 game last year against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Other than that, it's mainly been special teams here and there. But Friday was the first real taste that a lot of fans got to see of Trenton Simpson. I've gotten to see him a lot this summer in camp. Nolan, what did you see from Trenton?
Well, what I liked is he just looked confident. There really wasn't any second guessing in his movements. And the only other time that we've seen him play, you know, legitimate, sizable snaps in a game was the regular season finale last year in that Steelers game. But I've always felt like as good as he played in that game, he was being set up by Mike McDonald to succeed. They put him in, you know, strictly run blitzing scenarios. Patrick Queen was getting some reps early in that game as well, so he had him next to him. This one, where you don't have Queen next to you, you obviously don't have Roquan next to you, you are the green dot guy.
Yep.
I felt like he acquitted himself well. Saw him shed a couple blocks, make good solo tackles. Only thing, not really his fault, but unfortunately on some of those runs early by the Eagles, I felt like the D-line wasn't doing him any favors. You know, guys were getting through, their backs were getting through the line pretty easily. And, you know, Simpson was there. He had to make probably more solo tackles than he should have.
Yeah, he definitely flew around quite a bit. He was a tackling machine. And that's number one for me. When you're talking about him replacing Patrick Queen, that's going to be important because people could talk about Patrick Queen early in his career struggling with some of the open field tackles. As his career went on, especially the last couple of years, that wasn't the case for him, really. So they need whoever, obviously it looks like it's going to be Trenton Simpson, but they need him to be a sure tackler because that's what he's replacing. He's replacing a guy who has led their team in tackles pretty much his entire time here in Baltimore. So I did like that. I like the decisiveness. He's been aggressive in camp. There's been times where he's tackling guys. I mean, He had a time a couple weeks ago where he pretty much chokeslammed Derrick Henry, and it is not very often people are doing that. And it was pretty impressive, probably not very impressive to Harbs at the time, but impressive to me on the sideline. We talked about Nate Wiggins a little bit earlier. Obviously, his good night gets watered down a little bit with him getting hurt in the third quarter, but by all accounts, it seems like it's not going to be anything too serious. What did you think of Nate?
It looked like a starter. I mean, I didn't really know what kind of adjustment period he would need to the NFL. You know, first round corner, you certainly expect him to be a starter for you that season, but I just didn't know if, you know, his frame, if that would be an issue. Mm-hmm. I quite frankly just haven't seen him play much.
Right.
So you're curious what it looks like, but blanket coverage, not afraid to get into the hand fighting stuff, but mm-hmm. also understanding and having a good sense of, all right, when to stop, you know, kind of playing the referees a little bit. Only downside for him, besides the injury, the Eagles' first touchdown, kind of felt like that was his fault. He was a little out of position. The running back coming out of the backfield to catch that just a little swing pass for the touchdown. To me, it looked like that was his guy.
Yeah.
He started the shade towards the tight end, but the linebackers, whoever it was, Ross or Simpson, already had him. Yeah, just a little mistake there.
Yeah, and I think that's the part of his game he's still trying to deal with is, you know, the makeup speed is clearly there, but sometimes the makeup speed can be a detriment to you as a defender because you feel like you can give some ground. Every DB wants to bait the quarterback, but you start giving them a little too much room thinking that you're going to make up for it. Guys at this level, they're getting the ball there. Kenny Pickett, none of us think the world of Kenny Pickett, but he's an NFL quarterback. It's different from playing against some of these guys that he's seen in the ACC over the last couple of years. So I think that's just the adjustment of understanding quarterbacks at this level, especially if they're on the field, they're putting the ball in places where it's tough for you to get to more times than not. Offensively, it's just not a lot there because quarterback play isn't great. Receiver play wasn't great. The offensive line wasn't fantastic. I thought Owen Wright did the best out of the running back group of anybody. You know, I thought he showed some bursts. He hit the hole a couple of times. He made some guys miss. But other than that, offensively, I mean, Tylan Wallace probably comes to mind. And right now, it's tough for me to envision Tylan Wallace not making this team because a lot of these receivers that are in that tier of the roster with Tylan Wallace, none of them are really doing much. I thought Sean Ryan maybe would flash a little bit. He was on the practice squad last year. Not a lot of noise made from him. Dayton Wade, 4 catches, 27 yards. He's one that I'm still going to keep my eye on. Not that he's anything fantastic, but the ball seems to find him at practice. I think he's a guy that with some more time, maybe he could be a back end of the depth chart type of guy. But none of these guys are special, you know, right now. It's just, you know, there's always a receiver it feels like that everybody wants to cling on to in the preseason. I don't know if there's a receiver that is on this team right now for that.
No, I kind of thought it would be Devontae Walker, but his draft status, he's making it anyway.
Right.
Even if he doesn't have the best preseason. To me, Tylan Wallace, it's going to be tough, especially if they end up actually falling in love with Anthony Miller or Russell mm-hmm. Gage. That takes up another spot right there. You know, Wallace, I think they like his special teams ability, but if he's a non-factor offensively, is that really someone that you're saying, all right, we're going to dedicate, you know, 1 out of 53 to a guy who's going to play? I mean, he's not even a guarantee to be your fully dedicated
he may not even
returner.
Dress.
So, yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going
to
be tough.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm still trying to figure out what they're trying to do with these receivers right now. I mean, you mentioned Gage and Miller, the two guys that they've added recently. I mean, how much of a shot do they really have? I'm not sure. I've liked both of them in the past at times. But I can't say that they're already. I mean, yesterday was Anthony Miller's first day at practice. I mean, he was fine. He didn't necessarily wow me or anything like that. And then you've got what's the returner now? I don't know why I'm drawing a blank. Deontay Hardy that's here as well, who's going to be in the mix. It seems like his role is strictly going to be returning, but obviously they'd like to give him have him give them something offensively if called upon. But again, none of those guys are really separating themselves in my mind the more that I watch them. This team is very top heavy when it comes to receiver. That's why it's so important that Rashad Bateman and all these guys are available to them as much as they can be.
And maybe Miller or Gage just ends up simply being injury insurance, knowing Rashad Bateman's track record. And look, I mean, he's already, it may be a minor injury here, but he's already banged up again. Mm-hmm. So case in point, you can never have too many. Might as well get them in the system early, learn the playbook. That way you're not trying to scoop someone up midseason.
Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll take one last trip through the Funhouse with Quick Draw before Inside Access takes over at 2. That's next here on The Fan.
Quick Draws Funhouse. The rudeness, tuneness text reader.
Who's the fastest gun alive?
This side of the Chesapeake.
I like that Quick Draw.
105.7 The Fan.
First texter here, not happy with Brandon Hyde at all.
Ah, of course.
Says Hyde's the worst manager in the American League.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why stop there if he's the worst in the American
right.
League?
Let's just keep it going.
Goes on to say here, he doesn't make the right adjustments. His end game moves based on something that makes no sense to anyone else, and his lineups seem to be drawn from a hat. There's no consistency, just flat out bad. I think he needs to go.
Is it fair to say that we have reached a point? And look, I'm not saying that the texter is wrong or anything like that. This is just a question. Like, is it fair to say that we have reached the point to where it doesn't matter what Hyde does, it's the wrong move unless it clearly works out? Like, everybody's, I feel like we've reached it to where he no longer gets the benefit of the doubt. Every move he does is going to be questioned.
Right. But we only talk about the bad ones.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's praising him the next day when the pinch hit actually works.
Right.
It's just
right.
It's sort of expected. You know, that's the way fans work. But, I mean, we were all against what happened last week with pinch hitting. I don't think there was a single person that was defending that or at least skeptical about it. But that doesn't mean that every one of his moves is of the same vein where mm-hmm. it's just the worst decision I've ever seen. I mean, some people had a problem with him pulling Suarez when he did yesterday. I mean, all right, he finishes the seventh. Sure. Whatever. Okay, you're still got a 1-0 lead heading into the eighth. Who's he bringing in? It's still going to be Perez or it's still going to be Kimbrel. And you saw what Kimbrel is doing. Mm-hmm. Just because he's facing a different batter leading off that inning, he didn't have command. He probably still walks the batter. Probably still gives up the tying run or the go-ahead run. That wasn't the difference in the game. And yeah, they only scored one run. You're not going to win a game when your offense only gets a solo homer, and that's all there is.
Yeah, I do think some of it gets – some things get put on him that aren't his fault. Like you said, who else is he going to in the bullpen right now? It's not his fault that Kimbrel stinks right now. It's not his fault that Perez – you can't really trust him these days. It's not his fault that the rotation is just – kind of depleted at this point. It's not his fault that the offense only got one run. I mean, at the end of the day, the players have to play. Some things are within his control. I do think he has a quick hook at times. That's evident. That happens. But all in all, blaming him for the lineups, at this point, the lineups are kind of what they are. I mean, he hasn't really tinkered with it as much here recently. You may get a Menez in there one day and not the next, but other than that, for the most part, the everydayers are in their spots. I just think this team just has not been playing good baseball, and it's causing us to really look at every mistake that Brandon Hyde does make, or we're seeing it. We're not missing it at all.
Howard in Baltimore here, he has his anger directed at Craig Kimbrel. Says, once again, Kimbrel does what he does. He's too inconsistent. It's costing the team. You get an outstanding performance from Suarez. Kimbrel comes in and screws it up.
Mm-hmm.
This can't happen in the playoffs. You're going up against a struggling Tampa team. Imagine what's going to happen when you're going up against a playoff caliber team.
Well, Perez screwed it up first, and then Kimbrel followed up and screwed it up even more. I mean, I'm more willing to give grief to the players than I am the guy that's on the side. I mean, I don't want to make it seem like he doesn't have any control over the game, but for the most part, the players are the ones that do it. Kimbrel is the one that's constantly going out there blowing games. These guys in this lineup, they're the ones constantly not coming up with a big hit with runners in scoring position. So that's where I feel like the anger should be mostly driven to, the guys that are out there every day that actually have say-so on the outcome of these games.
Some people don't like to hear about the pitching workload stuff. You know, they don't really buy into it, say, why can't this guy pitch?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but case in point is Jacob Webb. I mean,
yep,
he's pitched in 53 games
this year. Could say Cologne, too.
And you keep throwing those guys out there. You trust him. Webb was one of the most reliable relievers on the team. But it adds up. And eventually, he has to sit down for a week on the IL because, as Elias was saying, he's just too sore in the elbow.
Right.
So, I mean, fatigue is real with these guys, whether people want to admit it or not. The whole debate around workloads in the modern baseball sphere, it's kind of annoying that people, if you're of a certain generation, they just don't accept it. It's like, why can't everyone go throw 200 pitches a game?
I mean, Brandon Hyde is talking about how Kimbrel is coming off, 4 days rest again. I feel like that's a common theme with him, and that's mainly due to, it doesn't matter what situation he puts Kimbrel in, he makes him look bad. So I think Hyde is kind of in between on how and when to go to Craig Kimbrel these days.
And last one here, Texter on the Ravens says, how far behind is TJ Tampa after missing the first few weeks of camp, especially with so much depth at corner? Is he behind guys like Armour Davis and Williams in the pecking order?
He might be. I'd say he's probably right there with Williams, but yeah, he probably is behind Armour Davis. But, you know, it's not like he was going to be a starter anyway, so he does have the time to kind of get into a rhythm. I'm curious to see how they use him in these last two preseason games, how much he gets to play, if at all. But I don't think Tampa was a guy that they were necessarily counting on to be a huge focal point of the defense right now anyway, so he'll have time to kind of catch up right now. That'll do it for us. Another great one in the books. Appreciate Nolan. Great job on the board, as always. Appreciate all you guys that tuned in. Don't touch that dial. Inside Access, they're up next at 2 o'clock going until 6. Until tomorrow morning, class dismissed.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts!